Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Varla Ventura as we talk about vampires, werewolves, and banshees, and more creatures on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Varla Ventura. Varla, when you wrote the trivia book, The Book of the Bizarre, what little freaky facts did you really enjoy? What popped out there?
A couple of things that kind of stood out for me were that the U.S. government has approved maggots as a actual medical device.
Yes, you put them on people.
That really, I've never forgotten when I read that story and wrote about it. It's just basically, you know, maggots will just eat decayed flesh and then they move on. They don't want your nice, healthy flesh. And so there's been studies, I mean, this goes back to like Napoleon times where people were coming back and the ones that actually had maggot-infested wounds coming back from battle, and the maggot-infested wounds, they actually survived, whereas people who had had their wounds flushed out, you know, they died of infection. So we've known this, and the U.S. government has been working at it. The FDA actually approved maggots as a medical device. You can get a prescription for maggots from your doctor.
Yuck.
I've never forgotten that. And, you know, it's good to keep that in your back pocket, maggots.
Freaky things.
Very freaky things, and it's definitely something you wouldn't imagine putting on yourself. But they are sterile. You get, like, sterilized eggs. You don't, you know, you just scoop up maggots from a rotting steak or something.
No, I think you could get an infection that way.
You definitely, that's not the kind of maggot. We are not sanctioning the use of.
Well, it's kind of funny, though.
Maggots.
I mean, maggots, they used this years ago during the early days when we never had modern medicine. Now we're going right back to it.
Yep, maggots, leeches. You know, they were onto something with that.
they sure were. How did you get the facts for the book?
Well, I had a massive library that I went through. I spent a lot of time at the public library. I read a lot of newspapers and magazines and pretty much every online news source now has, you know, like an online newspaper has a source for weird news, and I regularly check those. And I also did a lot of just ghost hunting. I talked to people that I knew that had had paranormal experiences. I sort of put a call out there for stories. I love something I like to include in the books were firsthand accounts, because to me those are like some of the most valuable stories, because somebody actually experienced them and they're telling you and they're granting you permission to, you know, retell their story. And that's I think really, it's fun and it can be very scary. I heard a couple of stories from friends of mine that they had never told me that really, really actually did kind of give me chills. And I still think about them sometimes late at night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, is that scribble monster going to come out of the corner? Or strange things like that. It was kind of a variety of things that I'm always keeping my eye out for that sort of unusual story. I listen to Coast to Coast. I love, you know, with the second book, Beyond Bizarre, a lot of people that had read the first one or had heard me on Coast to Coast, for example, actually called or contacted me via email.
Yep, coming up on your one year anniversary on that, isn't it?
Yeah. And I got a couple of people told me their, you know, their own ghost stories or their own paranormal stories, and that's always really fun.
Let's go to the phones. Many out there. Let's go to Kevin to get things going. Margate, Florida. Good morning, Kevin.
In North Dakota.
Where are you?
No, I'm in Margate, Florida.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I couldn't hear too good on the phone.
That's right.
I've always been a big fan of Coast to Coast since I hurt my back about the time you started, about 10 years ago.
Well, thank you.
But my question was, you guys left out my favorite vampire of all, Barnabas Collins.
Ah, yes. Loved
it. I was wondering if your guest, Miss Ventura, heard of him or watched him on TV.
Dark Shadows.
Yes, I watched Dark Shadows. Yes, and
Barnabas,
I've
of course, is not with us anymore.
No, and I've seen the movie, of course. You know, I have to say, I love anything Johnny Depp does. So, yeah, he's my favorite vampire is Bela Lugosi, but I have a great deal of love for Barnabas Collins as well.
Barnabas was a gentleman type Dracula, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That was a classic. I know my sister used to rush home from school to watch that all the time. I never got into it as a kid. You know, subsequently, I've interviewed a number of people on the program here about it, but I never got into it as a kid. It was a long time ago. You weren't even around. But you weren't even born, were you?
Oh, no, I certainly not. No.
All right, Murphy's...
I wasn't drinking with a overage boy.
No, that's right. Chris in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Good, yes, sir. Yes, I just didn't know what your guest knew about Lilith, the goddess of Lilith.
Uh-huh.
Yes. The fable and the myth of Lilith and all that, how she started the whole vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
What do we know about that?
I mean, you may well know more than I do, but that's a really good point. You know, in a lot of the stories that we have sort of in the popular culture, a lot of times the main character was a male vampire or a male werewolf. And there actually are, you know, many, many she wolves out there, and probably just as many stories of the origins of vampires. There's actually a story that I worked on, and it's called Claremond. It's called Claremond. You can go right onto Amazon and type in Barla Ventura plus Claremond, and it's the name of the vampire. And I think that the person who wrote it, they must have been a devotee of Lilith. If you read sort of the description, and it's actually a very torrid story. It's a story of a priest who is just taking his vows, and at the exact moment he's taking his vows, he looks up, and just as he's sworn his life to God, he looks up and he sees this woman, and he looks at her and he thinks, I have done the wrong thing. And this woman kind of keeps coming back into his life. And it's a pretty short story, and I don't want to give the ending away because it's kind of freaky.
Well, what do you mean he's done the wrong thing, though? What does that mean?
He looked at her, and he thought, I just swore my life away to God, and I am meant to be with you. And the description of this woman, I mean, she sounds like Lilith. She just appears, and she's this sort of fantastical, beautiful woman that doesn't actually do anything but appear. But it sends him into this tailspin where he's questioning everything he knows, and it becomes this vampiric relationship. And I don't want to say what happens in the end, but there's totally a twist ending. But I think that, yeah, there's a lot of Lilith out there.
Let's go to Todd driving in Alabama. Hey, Todd, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. Thank you very much. I have to admit, I only usually catch about the last 5 minutes of your show when I'm getting up and driving to work in the morning.
Okay.
So I'm not a devoted listener, but I have caught it over, you know, traveling over the years. I'm not into the vamp boy stuff or anything like that. I generally think most of this stuff is hooey. But that being said, a little background on me. I grew up in the foothills of the Appalachians. From the time I could walk, I'd always wander the woods at night. I'm very familiar with it. I've heard every kind of critter there is out in these woods. I was an airborne ranger in the Army. I've been all through the jungles of Central America, the high plains of Iraq and the Middle East. And I've heard howler monkeys. I've heard wildcats. I've heard everything else in the world. 12 years ago, my wife, then my fiance, it was spending the night with me. Where I live is right on the edge of a wilderness area. You can go out my back door and probably go 5 miles before you even cross a dirt road. No neighbors around. There's nothing around my house. I live literally in the middle of the national forest. We were lying in bed. It was a January night, very cold. The heater wasn't working very well in my house, so the house is nice and cold, very quiet. We'd just gone to bed, and we heard the most unnatural noise.
Scream, yeah.
Well, the way I describe it to people, when I tell this story and the other hackles get up on their back, the way I describe it to them, and the only way I can describe it because it was so unnatural, was like, imagine you're watching a horror movie and somebody opens up a gate to hell and you hear 1,000 tortured souls screaming and moaning in pain. It was very loud. It wasn't like something that, you know, you just barely heard. We both heard it. We both sat up in bed. And like I said, I have roamed this earth in fear of no man or no creature, you know, many times in my life. And that is, I can honestly say, the only thing like that that has ever, ever scared me.
Did it sound like just one creature?
No. It sounded like a multitude of voices kind of merged into one.
Did it sound animal or human?
No. It sounded human.
Whoa!
I've heard bobcats, I've heard mountain lions, and they will make a very, you know, human-like scream. But this was like a multitude of voices, a wail of just pain and anguish. It did not sound. It sounded like vocal cords, but it didn't sound like animal. But it did not sound like a single human. It was just. There's no way I could could replicate the sound because it wouldn't do it justice. But it was terrifying, and I have never been terrified in my life. And for the last 12 years, I can start to tell this story to people when they're over at the house. My wife will leave the room to this day. She does not want to hear it. It scared both of us that badly. I jumped up fully unclothed, ran on the porch with a big flashlight, the big spotlight was shining it around. She's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, whatever that is, I'd rather meet it out here on the porch than it coming through the bedroom window."
How would you like to stumble into these in the woods somewhere? Oh, no.
We still roam. I mean, of course, now, when I was a kid, it was just me out there by the moonlight. Now I've got night vision goggles and everything else.
Yeah.
And wander around and just, you know, goof off on a cool spring night or in the fall and just walk through the woods and see what you can see and listen. But I tell you what, it was a long time before I could step back in those woods at night.
I don't blame you. Ever hear of anything like that, Farla?
This call is the reason that I love Coast to Coast, because no matter how much research I do or how many people I talk to or how much we talk, there is always a story out there, and there's someone like you, Tom, that calls in and
spooky.
You scare the living daylights out of everyone with your story.
Got a text in from Terry in Wyoming. He says, "Hey, George, I'm Hispanic, wondering if Varla knows about the little evil elves." I guess he calls them duendes.
Ooh.
Have you ever heard of that?
No.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Me too.
Little evil elves.
Can I get that by my email?
I don't have. Well, yeah, I think. Yeah. No, we just have a text from him. We have his phone
number.
Okay.
If he's listening, email me at varlaventura@gmail.com and tell me all about your little elves.
Okay. And let me spell it for you, by the way. D-W-E-N-D-A-Y-S. D-W-E-N-D-A-Y-S. So check that out, Varla. Do a little search on that.
Wow, okay.
Little evil elves.
That sounds great.
You know, I'm convinced that leprechauns might have been like that.
Yeah.
You know, real little creatures out there.
Yeah, mischief makers.
Yes, that lived in the woods. I don't think they were mystical at all or magical. I just think they were little tiny evil things.
Yeah, you know, I read something really recently about sort of mystical beings, and I can't even remember who wrote it, but it was just saying, I think we're very, we're pretty far from that the supernatural. These things, they were scarce then, and they're scarcer now, but they're still out there.
East of the Rockies, Ruben's with us in Portage, Wisconsin. You're on with Varla Ventura. Hey, Ruben.
Hi, George. Thanks for allowing me to tell Varla my story.
Sure. Love to.
There's a 40-acre property here in Wisconsin called Durwood Glen. Bernard Isaac Durwood, a very religious, artistic, poet, craftsman, moved his family there from Milwaukee in 1962. They sold it to St. Camilla's Church in Milwaukee in 1932 for $1, and seminaries for priests was created there. You can still rent a cabin there today, and it's open to the public. There's altars and a cemetery for Catholic priests and many statues. The thing is, one day I was there with my girlfriend, and we were walking down one of the paths, and out of nowhere, this dog showed up, and he was jet black, head to toe, tail to nose, and he came at us, and he gave us a wide berth, and we gave him a wide berth, and he passes by, and I turned over my shoulder to make sure he wasn't going to come up behind us. When I turned over, he was gone. And at that time, I just convinced myself that it was just a farm dog heading home after chasing rabbits. But there was just something about this dog. He didn't belong there. There's no dogs on the property. It was just, I always thought in the back of my mind that it could have been a shapeshifter or a werewolf, because he looked at us like with disdain and disgust. I was just wondering if she could... shed a little light. Was this just a farm dog heading home, or did this thing appear and disappear, and was he on his way somewhere else?
Well, we've heard a lot of stories about evil dogs, Varla, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all read Cujo, right?
Cujo. Oh, those dogs with red eyes.
Yeah, he was the master, and I think he captured that. It's somewhere between the werewolf and the domestic dog. You know, I don't know. I can't really say what you saw, but it sure sounds like it was something from the supernatural.
Well, why does Hollywood always make the dog seem to be so evil, like in, you know, The Omen?
Yeah, well, I mean, do you want to go, if you want to see a movie about a happy dog, you'll go watch, you know, Homeward Bound or something, right? So I guess that's part of it, is that we want there's a part of everyone that wants to be scared on some level. It's entertaining, I guess. But I mean, I think werewolves have got
Old Yeller.
Old Yeller. Go watch Old Yeller if you want to watch something about a happy dog or a nice dog story. Otherwise, go watch Cujo.
Yeah, I wonder if you're a parent, where you take your kids to see a Lassie movie or Cujo, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the kid, I guess.
Yeah, if he's Cujo. If the kid's Chucky, who knows? What are you doing next? What's up on your agenda these days?
I am writing a book on mermaids, and that will be out in about, I think it's coming out in the just
yes.
in time for summer swimming.
Do you think they're real?
Yeah, I do. I think that they sort of fall in line with a lot of the fairies and goblins. I think that they were very, very prevalent even 300 years ago.
We're going to have to get you back for that when it's done. When's the book finished?
It'll be out in July of this next year.
Okay, that'll be great. Great timing. Varla, hold on. Stay with us. We're coming back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll have open lines here for you on Coast to Coast AM, but when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with our guest, Varla Ventura, on Coast to Coast AM. And Varla, before we take final calls, tell me the story of Emily Grant Hutchings.
Oh, that's a great story. Actually, I thought of that earlier. We were talking about the Ouija board.
Yeah.
Emily Grant Hutchings wrote an entire novel that she channeled via the Ouija board, and she claimed that the novel was written by Mark Twain from Beyond the Grave. And this is a lengthy novel. It actually is very much in the voice of Mark Twain, written about 7 years after he died. And the story is that Emily Grant Hutchings and her husband went to a seance at the time. This is, you know, back in the, I guess, late 1800s after he had died, maybe early 1900s. And they went to this seance, and this woman, this famous medium, channeled Mark Twain. And she said she had channeled Mark Twain many times before, and Mark Twain had told her he wanted to write a novel from beyond the grave, but he was waiting for the right person. And when Emily Grant Hutchings showed up, he identified her as the one. And the three of them, the medium, the husband, and Emily Grant Hutchings, painstakingly interpreted every word from the Ouija board into this, like I said, it's a fairly lengthy novel. The novel actually, at the time, I think, I have to get the exact year, but it was pulled from the presses by the estate of Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain's mm-hmm. legal name, by his daughter and by the publisher, Mark Twain's publisher. They stopped publication of it. So it was published, but it was printed, but it was never actually distributed, because they said there's no way you can't say that this novel was written by Mark Twain.
Sure.
So there were copies that actually existed out there, and they sort of got lost on the wayside, and now they're in the public domain. And I wrote an introduction to one. It's called Jap Heron, Japheron. And it's kind of a funny novel. In some ways, the story behind it is a little more interesting than the novel itself, but it's totally fascinating. And it actually sounds a bit like Mark Twain. So,
is it conceivable that someone like a Mark Twain would dictate like that through a Ouija board?
Well, you know, it was funny because I did a little more, once I had kind of read about this, I did a little more research into it, and Emily Grant Hutchings and Mark Twain actually had a bit of correspondence, so there was some connection there. They had sent a couple of letters back and forth. Supposedly, she sent him a manuscript, which he then told her, don't quit your day job. So there is some kind of history there, and there's also some really funny stuff in the introduction, in their original introduction, that talks about how they kept getting the apostrophe in the wrong place. Like, they kept putting a comma in place of an apostrophe, and it was kind of making the whole process more, you know, just more tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mark Twain said to them, well, every time I want to do an apostrophe, I run, and I just slip right off the board. So the husband of Emily Grant Hutchings, Mr. Hutchings, adapted this spirit board, this Ouija board, and put an apostrophe up in one corner and a comma down here so they could kind of expedite the process. So it's absolutely conceivable, and it's, you know, if it's all a publicity stunt, it's hilarious, and I think it worked.
Let's go next to Chris in Utah, west of the Rockies. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Great show.
Thank you, sir.
You guys are keeping me up. Barla, have you ever heard of them little mysterious people of Wyoming? That reminded me of that changeling legend. And there is legends that the Cheyennes had about these creatures. Have you heard about these?
A little bit. I'm not as familiar as with, like, the Irish changeling.
It was in the Frontier Times and the True West magazine. They had pictures of these little carnivorous things, and they were about 3 feet tall, and when they blasted the road to the Yellowstone River on the road above it, the road caved off. I mean, in the ledge, and that they had one buried in the hillside, and it was, you know, it was buried by others of its type because it was folded up, and, you know, and like in the burial position, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, they done X-rays on it. It had spiked teeth. It was under 3 feet. It was just a horrible thing. I mean, it's been bugging me all this time. Like, I got another thing after the I'm telling you. I'll tell you about what happened to me personally. But anyway, that Indian legend, I guess it's the Cheyenne Indians. They had that one. It's more, I don't think it's a legend. I think it's truth. They had a story about these little people were so evil and so smart that they were sneaking in one of the legends. They snuck into the, in one of the teepees or whatever, and killed the baby in the, you know, the papoose, and done away with it. And then they took its place. And then when the mother come in to nurse the baby,
they
attacked her breast and tore her up. And then they come running in and attacked the other Indians, and they had to take after them. And they finally had to annihilate them by going on a hunt for these things. And they said that these were, you know, it was all, you know, there were several big legends about them. And anyway, they had a story in both them magazines, and they had pictures of these things, but they've come up missing the bodies. And it really disturbed me back in the 70s, because why I'm going to tell you, because I was up there herding cows. We owned a ranch by Lone Tree, Wyoming, and in the late 70s I was up there herding cows, and there was a ruin up on the hillside, and you're not going to, nobody's going to believe it out there, but anyway, I went over there to the ruin, was kicking through, and I like to dig through stuff. And anyway, I found the foot of a, I don't know what it was, but it, you know, I took forensics in school, and this thing was a human foot, a tiny foot, and it was cut off, you know, like it'd been severed, cut off with an instrument or some kind. And it had five toes, but they had claws on the end of them. And it was
petrified.
And this thing, I kept going back to my horse, and I'd go back and pick it up again. And finally, I went over and I buried it under a rock pile so I could come back later. And finally, we sold the ranch and, you know, back.
And you don't have it. You don't have it.
Well, I know where it's buried, but I think it had something to do with these little evil people of the Yellowstone River deal. And
I've found that Native American stories, most of them were probably real. You know, the Thunderbirds.
They had the pictures. They done an X-ray of its skull, and it had spiked teeth all the way around. It had no molars. It was a carnivorous little thing. And they said that it aged about 60 years old is what the analysis on it was. And you know, somebody stole it and got rid of it because of they figured it was, you know, evil, and they destroyed the bodies they had, the two of them they had. And in fact, it was in those True West.
That's a great story.
Well, that was even weirder when I found that foot, and I'm still disturbed. But anyway, and on top of that, if you're doing a book on them mermaids, I got a museum here. But anyway, I've got like four or five life-size mermaid bronzes. Maybe I can get you some pictures of them to help you with your book.
Oh, that'd be beautiful.
Give out your website again, Varla, and your email.
Okay, it's Varla Ventura, my name, .wordpress.com, or you can Google search the blog of the bazaar. That's my main website. My email is varlaventura@gmail.com. And all the some mermaid shorts, some werewolf and vampire stuff, that's all available right now as ebooks. You can go to Amazon and type in Varla Ventura and magical creatures or banshees or vampires, and you'll get several very affordably priced electronic books.
Let's go to Shannon in Gainesville, Georgia, first-time caller. Hi, Shannon.
George, Varla, good evening to you.
You too.
Good evening.
Very fascinating show. I just wanted to weigh in the conversation tonight. I agree with Varla that all these creatures that she has been researching are actually real, except I would go one step further and just say I believe that these are part of Satan and his demonic host of hell. Varla, in your research, what do you really think at the end of the day about the term demons? And have you come across any of these creatures that kind of fall into what you might call mind control spirits? Leviathan, Octagon, do any of those names ring a bell in stuff that you've researched?
Well, a lot of my research has been based in Irish and Welsh folklore. So, no. There's not too many, there's maybe demon-like spirits, but not per se. But certainly demons come up in the process, and a lot of that mind control, actually a lot of the mind control stuff comes up when I've done some of the vampire research. So I think there's some connections there.
Are you doing any investigation into exorcisms as part of your research? What's your take on that right now?
I haven't really done much research into exorcisms. To be perfectly honest, I don't like them. I don't necessarily want to get rid of all of these spirits. I mean, I don't want people being tormented by them. But I'm not interested in banishing them. I'm a little more interested in figuring out how we can live with them or learn more about them.
Okay,
yeah,
Shannon.
The final comment I want to make is just finally on the Ouija board, and I would agree that what you experienced was real, and I just want to close by saying very dangerous to play with. These things open up a definite portal, and the research I've done is actually when they produce these things, there is a specific demonic spirit which is assigned to the board. So even if you play with it, you know, with a curiosity, hey, you know, is this thing real or not? You've actually opened up the door, and then worse than that, I believe you just opened yourself up for a four-generational witchcraft curse, like the Bible talks about. So I would say, hey, stay away from it unless you want to open up the door for some real attacks. And these attacks are real. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Tonight.
Thank you, Shannon. Good input there. Well, you know, the Ouija board itself, I would guess that these spirits or entities are looking for ways to come through this portal and that helps open it up? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be early forms of divination were, I mean, it's called divination because you're connecting with the divine or some kind of other spirit that you can't see, some kind of idea or other being. So I think the Ouija board was an adaptation of, you know, something. There's casting runes. We've been doing things with cards for thousands of years, with stones, with the way that sticks fall on the ground. There's all different forms of communicating and kind of helping you make decisions. And I think the Ouija board is just sort of adapted from that. But then you throw in that Victorian parlor element, and no one loved a ghost story like the Victorians. The most proper society, they love to be scared, and there's thousands of Victorian ghost stories out there, and they're all that sort of what if and what is lurking around, and this one person, they went off the path a little bit, and it's all that kind of terrific stuff. It came from that real rigid time, and so you throw that in with the love of divination, and you stick them all in a parlor in front of a fire at night, and, you know, the Ouija board is basically, you know, that is born, and that is one of the most interesting forms of entertainment.
Okay, let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hello, Micah. Go ahead.
George, Ms. Ventura, I'd like to bid you a very good morning or good evening, whatever the case may be.
You too, Micah.
George, I spoke to you in 2007 in November when you had a doppelganger line set up.
I remember the doppelganger line. Sure do.
Well, I'm going to share briefly that same story because at that time I had no clue what a doppelganger was until you made the statement or someone inadvertently stated the ghost of a living person. And that clicked a wealth of memory. It was the summer of the Olympics, early 80s, either 81 or 82. I was approximately maybe 8, 9 years old. And it was a Saturday morning. I know it had to be because of what I said. I woke up dead from a dead sleep at 4:25 a.m. And I looked at my clock. I had a red digital clock. It was the new thing back then. And I just had my eyes open. I had a church next door with bright lights in the parking lot. Well, to get to the chase, my night vision was very correct, you know. All of a sudden, I saw something flutter at the foot of my bed as I was looking that direction. And I didn't get scared. I didn't pay it no mind. I thought that it was just something floating on my eye, maybe. And then I saw it come up again, and it resembled a hand. And just like you would in a Hollywood movie, I balled up both my fists, rubbed my eyes. I knew I was awake. And then I looked and I saw a hand, a human hand, come up from the foot of my bed, waving, longer this time than the other two previous. And I sat right up and followed it as it went down to my cousin, whom I won't name, but we were born 363 days apart. I don't know if that has any bearing. She's the older. And I saw her rocking back and forth, wearing the same little sailor outfit she was wearing the day before. And I went, oh, gosh, you scared me. And I laid back down on the bed, and I said, there's Kool-Aid in the fridge, and just wake me up when the cartoons come on. Hence, I knew it was Saturday morning. And I'm going to go back to sleep. And then I looked at the clock, and it said 4:27 a.m. And she was supposed to come to our home that morning when my grandfather went to work at 6. And it clicked on me, and I sat back up. She's still sitting there smiling, rocking back and forth. And I said, what are you doing here so early? Granddad hadn't even got up to go to work yet. And over the next 45 seconds to a minute, she slowly dematerialized before my eyes. I was so scared. I have never known true fear like that one moment. I got out of my bed, went into the bathroom, shut the door, turned the light on, and put my back to the door. About an hour later, my stepfather, who was very stern about me being out of my room because I was a wondering little kid, that was my next fear, that I was going to be disciplined for it. And when he opened that door and my back was against it and he kind of pushed it, and looked in and saw me, he said my name, And he said, he saw fear on my face, because he said with the calmest voice, my nickname, and said, come on, let's go back to bed, buddy. And from him saying that, I actually felt safe walking back into my room. Now, what I was going to pose to you is, first of all, this is one of the benefits of listening to Coast AM for 15 years. It's going to relate to you somehow.
Sure, it does, eventually.
And also, I've used the term doppelganger since. Would you know of any other entities that would take the form of someone that you know?
What do you think, Marla?
That close.
Well, the question I'm dying to ask is, did you see your cousin the next day?
Yes, I did. And I also chalk that up as the one reason I don't pick on people whenever they say it scared me so bad I never said anything, because I never said anything until I heard the description on Coast to Coast AM. I never told anybody.
Well, it makes me think of someone who actually to me, I immediately thought an out-of-body experience, that your cousin had an out-of-body experience or astrally was able to astrally project. You probably heard those terms, and came and gave you a visit. We are always hearing of these things happening where you'll see someone, but they've died. But it is, I think it's much rarer to see someone who is alive. And I love the idea. I love that description of a doppelganger.
That is great. Marla, we're out of time, but I will talk to you when the mermaid book comes out, okay?
Beautiful, George. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thank you. Now, we're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Guess what? That's right. A couple hours now of those Friday night into Saturday morning open line.